Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor and director and also producer of Resident Alien.
Yeah!
Hey! Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil and myself, your favorite Eternal Ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers.
Wow.
Yeah. You like that dramatic pause I gave you?
I did. I didn't know where you were going.
I didn't know where I was going either.
We've covered some weird stuff. So.
Yes, we have.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
I decided to pull it to something more current.
Resident Alien, which now is, you know, the part two of our season two is finally airing. So
exciting.
I hope everybody's watching it.
I think they are. It's a great show.
I hope so. It's a
great
show.
So I'm jetting around, flying here, flying there. I just got back into Vegas. I was in
Calgary.
I was in Calgary only for a couple of days, but I promised Megan that I would make it for the Hamilton showing in Calgary, basically. The Hamilton came to Calgary.
The tour came through town?
Yeah, they came through town.
Oh, that's so exciting.
We went to go watch it, and it was understudy night. But I got to say, the one understudy that knocked it out of the park was the actress who played Eliza, Alexander Hamilton's wife. And this young lady was Asian American, Chinese American.
Really?
So I was so excited to see
that's awesome.
Representation. And boy, she did a good job.
Oh, that's
really
awesome.
Good. Yeah. And then, you know, they had an understudy for Burr, which is a huge role an understudy. And there were some numbers that he did very well and others that it just seemed he was a little nervous, you know, and that happens. Washington kind of went up on a line. He didn't go up on a line. He said the wrong word, which was kind of weird. And he corrected himself. And then he had to speed his wrap up to catch up with the music. And I felt really bad for him. I'm like, oh, you know, because as actors, we all have those nights where everything seems to go not the way we want.
Oh,
we planned, you know, and we get tongue tied and the wrong word comes out of our mouth. And we're maybe, you know, so I feel for the man.
I'll tell my worst. The worst theater mess up night.
Ooh.
And it really had nothing to do with me, but I was left holding the ball. So do you remember Mattel Electronic Football?
Yes.
The little game where
Coleco. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it was a little handheld.
Yeah.
And the little red dots will move around.
Yes. So every American boy had one.
I had one and I'm doing a play. A professional production of the Unsinkable Molly Brown musical at the Harlequin Dinner Theater in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm 15
goodness.
Years old.
Oh.
I'm in the chorus. I'm just like in, I'm one of the chorus guys. But it was like a 6 week run or something. So, we had been doing this play night after night and I was there was a scene on the boat where Molly Brown gets a telegram.
Okay.
And basically the telegram says, Molly, you've got to come to New York to this big party. Right.
Yeah.
And I was dressed for the big party number that was about to come up after this scene. And I'm sitting in the wings playing my electronic football. And I'm waiting. I knew that there was a couple minutes left. And so I'm waiting. And then all of a sudden it's silent. And I look up. And the guy that's supposed to come out with the telegram lines.
Yeah.
He's nowhere to be found.
Oh, no.
So they're out on stage waiting for the guy who's supposed to bring the telegram. And I'm sitting there with the electronic football and I'm looking and I'm like, what do we do? And the stage manager rips a page out of his script.
And hands it to you and shows you out there?
Folds it up like a telegram, hands it to me and goes, go. Oh. I didn't know the lines. I didn't know the scene. I didn't know what he was supposed to say. So I go out there and I'm like, Molly, this is for you. And they sort of improvise. And I'm clearly, I'm in a tuxedo for the next number. Like, what? And as luck would have it, that was the night my father came to see the show.
Oh, no.
So after the show,
I
go to see my father. And he's like, oh, it was so fun. It was great. He goes,
yeah.
But you had a little mess up there in your scene with the telegram. And I'm like, that wasn't my scene, Dad.
Oh,
I wasn't supposed to be in that. So it was, I was terrified because I didn't,
Okay, the question that everyone is asking is, what happened to the telegram actor?
I the dressing rooms were like upstairs above the stage. Okay. And there's a monitor so you can hear the play going on while you're in the dressing room.
Correct.
And people chat and wait, and he just wasn't paying attention.
Oh my gosh.
So he came running down. So as I came off the stage,
he came running down. He
was running down like panting.
Oh my gosh.
Terrified. It was funny. Yeah. So things happen. You know,
look at you picking up the slack. That guy owed you a pizza at least.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. Well, it was a dinner theater. There's plenty of food around. So.
Did they fire him after that or no?
No, I don't think so.
There really wasn't anyone to fill in.
No, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? But, you know, I think that's something that I would dream of, like as a nightmare of missing my cue to come on stage for
a stage
production. I would, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine doing that. But it happens. And you must have been turning red and purple. Having to deal with that.
My heart was just racing.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
The actors in the scene were so great because they were like, you know, I said, Molly, this is for you or something. I don't even know if I said, I was so terrified. I may not have even said anything.
Yeah.
And then she goes, oh, it's a telegram. And I think in the scene, he was supposed to say, yeah, it's from Buffalo Bill or whatever. Right. He's supposed to say a lot of stuff that gives her information.
Yeah.
So instead she was like, oh, is this a telegram? Is it from Buffalo Bill?
Oh,
like she's and I was like, mm-hmm.
prompting you.
Yeah. She's like, is he in New York right now? Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
And are you going to a costume party later?
Yes.
You're very well dressed for a telegram person for a messenger. So that would have been very funny. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing. I've never experienced anything like that, but that must have been terrifying for you and for the other actor who missed his cue.
Yeah. That's the theater. It's exciting.
Yeah, it is. Hey, are you ready to watch this episode?
I am. Okay. What is the episode again?
It's called Alice.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
All right. We will be right back. Robbie and I will be right back with our recap and discussion of the episode Alice. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Okay. Robbie and I are back from watching Alice.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Okay. Withhold your comments. Let's just go right into our poetry synopsis.
Okay.
And I'm going to start with my haiku for Alice, and it goes a little something like this.
Okay.
Tom has a new toy. It has a mind of its own. Torres saves Tom's bum. My other option was Torres alarm clock.
Nice.
But I went with Torres saves Tom's bum. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Well, here we go with a limerick synopsis. As they say somewhere, I don't know who they are, but they say they always say synopses.
Yes.
I say synopsis. Okay, here we go with limerick. A shuttle and Tom start to blend. He thinks she's some kind of girlfriend. Tom goes on the run. B'Elanna says, this is done. From now on, Tom's hobbies will just be a friend.
Good job. All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey,
thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. Give us the rundown when it comes to the guest stars. I want to hear about
our guest stars. So we have Claire Rankine playing Alice. Mm-hmm. And Claire is a Canadian actress, probably best known for her recurring role as Dr. Kate Heitmeyer on Stargate Atlantis. She was like a recurring regular on Stargate Atlantis, so sci-fi fans would know from there. But her very first job that I could come up with was Death Wish, The Face of Death, 1994.
What?
Yeah, she was in Death Wish.
Is this the Charles Bronson series?
It's Charles Bronson. It's one of the Death Wish movies, so I don't know which one it was because he made sequels. So this is Death Wish, The Face of Death.
Oh my God.
And 1994.
If you recall, I was an extra on Death Wish 3 or 4.
One of them.
Whatever it was. And Tim Russ was actually a bit player, under 5 actor on that film as well.
Oh, that's funny. And so was Claire Rankine.
And so, okay. Good to know.
Our other actor is John Fleck.
Mm.
Star Trek fans will know him from lots of roles that he played in Star Trek. He plays Abaddon.
Yeah.
And John Fleck is he was born in Cleveland for those that love Cleveland. That's where Tim Hagen, Kate Mulgrew's ex-husband. Tim was from Cleveland. And let's see, his very first job that John Fleck has that I'm aware of. I know he did a lot of theater, so he had a big theater career, but his first film job that I could find was in 1982, a movie called Truckin' Buddy McCoy. Some kind of low budget.
This sounds like a credit that you had on your resume, something that you'd have. Truckin' Buddy McCoy.
Yeah. Okay. Movie starred Terry Knox and Miguel Ferrer, and it was in 1982. That's John Fleck's first job that I could find on film.
Okay. But he's done a lot of other Trek, though. Other Trek.
Yeah.
Well, it definitely shows, because when it comes to guest stars, a lot of times guest stars are so uncomfortable doing Trek because technobabble, because pushing buttons, because, you know, a number of reasons. But I felt that his performance, he was so comfortable in his skin. It was really, it was impressive what he laid down. So
he was great. He's a great actor.
Job. Yeah.
I think he was in every one of the Star Trek franchises, the TNG, Voyager, DS9, and Enterprise.
Well, and if they haven't used him on the newer stuff, they should. This guy can definitely knock it out of the park.
Okay. He's great.
All right.
This was a teleplay by Brian Fuller and Michael Taylor.
Yeah.
Story by Julianne Delane. I don't know who that is.
Maybe it's pronounced, because it's spelled the same way as how, you know, how Delancey is little D,
Delaney,
little E, capital L. So I think it might be Delaney. Yeah, that's my guess.
Mm-hmm. Don't know. I don't know her, but Brian Fuller, Michael Taylor, who shared an office on our show, they wrote this teleplay, and David Livingston directed it.
It's a Livingston
show. Which I didn't
show.
Remember.
Right. I don't remember that at all either.
No. Well, you probably don't remember much because you were mostly on the bridge. Although you were.
Yeah, I have a shot in engineering. Yeah.
So, got a couple other shots. But I will say, watching this episode, first of all, it reminds me a lot of Stephen King's Christine.
Yes.
It
hence
basically
the name
feels,
probably is. It's the same.
It feels like a ripoff straight from that. From that story.
Mm-hmm.
It's our Trek version of Christine.
Right.
And I did not remember how much I did in this episode. I mean,
you're all over it.
Yeah. It's literally, I was like, oh my God, there's another scene with Tom Paris, like every scene. And I will say overall, I feel like it's a good story, but to me in the end, I had a lot of frustration watching this, and and I get why maybe I didn't remember it, because it just,
you blocked it out.
I blocked it out a little bit.
Okay.
I think I blocked it out.
But you know, even that being said, there are still going to be fans who really love this episode, regardless if you don't like it. There's still fan, and that's something that we've learned. There's episodes that we have both rated very low, and we've gotten emails or comments that this was my favorite episode of Voyager of all time. So, you know, don't be too hard on yourself, is what I'm trying to say.
But I do think, like, the idea of doing Christine in space is a good idea. I struggle with the story structure,
yeah,
and the kind of full journey of Tom going down this road of this haunted thing.
Spiraling just, downwards.
It didn't feel like it. I don't know. It felt like we skimmed the surface of this story.
Yeah.
And you know, my rule of a great episode is something that involves everybody more equally. And this one didn't. It was.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I don't think we saw the doctor until 30 or 40 minutes in. Like, mm-hmm. It was deep. We didn't see, you know, Janeway was getting caught up on the status from Chakotay near the end. Like, it was almost like, where was Janeway the whole episode? So
yeah,
I don't know. That part bothered me that we didn't see more of the cast.
Yeah, that's always been an important requirement for you in terms of what you deem to be a good episode. And for me, that's not as important. But, you know, when there are certain holes in the plot or certain things that stand out, that's what bothers me. And I personally feel that the suit, the flight suit, was introduced too early.
Oh,
because you're wearing that darn thing. Like, no one is making any. The only person who comments about it is Chakotay, who says, like, you know, get rid of it, shave, whatever. But no one else says the thing about, you know, Harry does say, what are you wearing? But still, I felt like that was introduced way too early. I feel like that flight suit should have come in right before the fight with B'Elanna, you know, or maybe that's when you should be wearing it for the first time, when you're showing, you know, when you're showing B'Elanna, not when you're showing her the ship, but when you come in and find her dying
or something.
That maybe that you have the suit then, but you're wearing it so early that kind of bummed
nobody me out. Really comments on like,
no, it's like
weird.
No, and it's almost, it just reminds me of like the, you know, when you talk about grade school kids going to school, and the one kid who's a little bit, you know, marches to the beat of his own drum wearing this, you know, the Captain America suit to school when everyone else is wearing normal clothes. That's kind of how I felt Tom was. It's almost like he's going to wear that suit now, you know. I mean, we'll let him wear his little costume. And I felt that that didn't really do justice to the episode or the story. So that bummed me out a little bit.
Well, let's get into the
episode. Yeah, let's get into it.
First thing is we're on the bridge.
Well, space shot first, right? Exterior space shot of Voyager. Yeah, leading
space
to the bridge.
Space shot, and then we go in on the bridge, and it's basically Tom and Harry trying to guess Tuvok's age, which is a very funny scene.
It's a great scene.
It's a really fun.
You guess 162, I guess 133. But the other funny thing, you notice Pablo is standing next to Tuvok.
I made a note of that.
Just staring at him. He's not, I mean, what is he doing there? It's one of our regular background guys, Pablo.
Pablo Soriano. Pablo Soriano was a regular background.
Yeah.
He's done a million commercials. You'll see him in commercials everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
And the thing I love about Pablo is he was a salsa dancer. Do you remember this?
Yes.
And he used to like dance around while waiting for, you know, everybody to get there.
Yeah.
He'd talk about his salsa nights. And I love Pablo's awesome. Yeah, but Pablo's just standing there while Tuvok is avoiding answering the questions from us. He's playing with a pad. And then at the end, he gets up and hands the pad to Pablo, which I was glad to see Pablo with a little specific screen time, not just deep background.
Yes. The other thing I made note of in the scene is when Harry says to Tuvok, don't tell me Vulcans are embarrassed about their age. Tuvok responds with this comment. He says, on the contrary, we value the wisdom that comes with advancing years. And that immediately rung a bell in my head. And the memory is whenever I try to do impersonations of the other cast,
yes,
as the in character, I would always find a go-to phrase from that character. So for Tom Paris, it's always been, yes, ma'am. So I use yes, ma'am to get into the Tom Paris voice.
And Chakotay. Okay?
Chakotay is, any luck yet, Tuvok? So the any luck yet, Tuvok is how I get into Chakotay. And for me, and Tim has always been a tough one for me to kind of wrap my head around or my mouth around in a way, because it's harder to get his voice down. But I do recall that was the line that I worked on day and night. On the contrary, We value the wisdom that comes with advancing years. So I use that one over and over again. On the contrary, we value the wisdom that comes with advancing years. And so I use that over and over again to try to get them come close. And yeah. I still feel that I'm not really as close as I'd like to be.
It's good. That was good.
But yeah, there it is.
It took you into season six before you had a catchphrase for Tuvok.
For Tuvok. Harry detects a fleet of ships, 200,000 kilometers dead ahead, but he can't identify the ships. Tom reads multiple hull configurations, so it's different ships. They're not all the same. Tuvok immediately orders shields to be raised, switches to red alert. At this point, Janeway comes in with Chakotay. She asks for a status report. Tuvok says there's a large group of ships dead ahead, possibly hostile. He says he's charging weapons. Harry detects 62 ships and a few hundred pieces of ships, all dead in space. And Paris has the best line of this scene. Congratulations, Tuvok. You just saved us from a flotilla of hostile trash, which I just love. So yeah. Good job there on the writing. We are then hailed by the guest star of the week and the
Mr. Abaddon, John Fleck.
Yeah, Mr. Abaddon, John Fleck.
He says, welcome to Abaddon's repository of lost treasures.
I love that line.
I love the introduction.
Yes. It sets
and
a really unique
them
tone.
To come in and browse, look around.
Yeah.
I thought he was great. The makeup on him was really different than we've seen.
Completely.
Yeah. And I liked it a lot. It sort of had this, you know, it was kind of the typical skin tone underneath, but then it had these kind of brown, almost like a shell, like an eggshell. And the back was this brown eggshell kind of protecting the head or something.
Was that his helmet or like, you know, was that some type of headgear?
I think it was part of his anatomy. I think it is.
All right.
But I thought it was really cool.
Still,
it was
very cool.
It's hard to get this far into the Star Trek world and come up with new makeups that really feel unique and different. And this one to me felt, you know, the color combinations, all of it felt really good. So,
and his choice of how he played that character and just his initial lines immediately kind of gave me this, it harkened to an earlier era. It was almost like we were back in the 30s or 40s, black and white movie, you know, very theatrical, very.
That's his theater training. John very Fleck. Unique. He's very talented. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's jump to the next scene. We're in the transporter room. And again, right off the bat, the camera is on Abaddon as he materializes. And again, he doesn't have that sort of confused look that guest stars have when they get transported onto our ship. He's ready to go. I mean, his lines are there. He's on point. So Abaddon arrives. We find out that his name is the same name that his father had, his grandfather had, not very creative. He's greeted by Chakotay and Neelix, and he senses
By the way, so he's greeted by Chakotay and Neelix. And the first thought I had was, why is Abaddon wearing Neelix's coat from the pilot?
He's not.
It looks like the same.
There's no way.
It's similar. It's similar. And I was like, that's not fair, because I love that coat on Neelix. And here's Abaddon coming in with styling like Neelix. And I was very upset about it.
You know, Neelix, that should have been his lines. Mr. Abaddon, that I have not seen my coat in a while. I think
that's
you're wearing
my coat.
It. That's
I think what? You're wearing my coat.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a traitor coat. Maybe that's sort of
maybe
a Delta
that's the
Quadrant.
Signature like,
the signature if you're a traitor.
Right.
A junk traitor like Neelix was, then you got to wear that kind of coat. That's
be.
What it is.
Oh my goodness. Good eye. You caught it.
He gives them a list of his available inventory.
Yeah.
And he looks around the transporter room. He's like, wow, you've got artificial gravity plating, plasma-based power induction system. Yeah. He's very impressed.
Yeah.
And by the way, he hands Chakotay his inventory.
Yeah.
And Chakotay within 2 seconds goes, oh, looks like you've got a few things here we could use. What is he, a speed reader?
He is a speed reader. I don't know if you know that, but that is...
How did he read it so fast?
Akuchimoya.
I guess so.
He used Akuchimoya. So.
And by the way, in the transporter room, did you see Jerry Fleck's nephew?
That's right, Simon. Jerry Fleck's nephew, our first assistant director's nephew, Simon.
He's the transporter control guy.
He's the transporter chief for the day. Good old Simon. Yeah. But Abaddon
didn't
is looking at these.
By the way, didn't Simon stand in for Neelix quite often?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, I thought so.
About the same height.
So he was the stand-in for lighting when they would be lighting the scene. Mm-hmm. Simon would stand there where Ethan Phillips would be doing the scene, and they'd get the lighting prepared with a stand-in. So that's what Simon did.
Yeah, Simon did that. Quiet guy, but nice guy. So, you know, Abaddon's really impressed with all these things that he sees, but Chakotay says those are integrated systems that we cannot trade. Neelix is the one that comes up with the suggestion that converting spare duranium sheeting in Cargo Bay 1 into gravity plating, and Chakotay's all over that. He's like, okay, you know what? Neelix, show Mr. Abaddon our inventory. And so Neelix takes Abaddon and they both leave.
So let me just talk about this for a second.
Yes.
So they're in the transporter room talking. They're all standing in the middle of the transporter room. And Chakotay says, okay, Neelix, you go give him a tour and I'm going to head this way. So Chakotay goes out camera right.
Yeah.
And then Neelix and Abaddon go out camera left as if there's a back door.
There is no back door.
Door.
They went nowhere.
Like, why are they going different directions? There's only one door in this place. It was
such a good eye. I feel this is something that our Admiral Jason Oaken is going to bring up. I feel like he's going to say, where did they walk to?
Yeah, I get why story-wise they want to say, okay, Chakotay's going this way, they're going that way.
Yes.
But there is no that
way. There is no that way. But the audience doesn't know that, so it's okay.
But now I'm telling you.
We've just ruined, Robbie has just ruined your experience, you're welcome, everybody. There's no back door.
You're welcome. Okay, we go to Astrometrics. There's Paris, Seven, and Harry.
Yeah.
Looking at what is available, I guess, for them from this
inventory.
Junkyard.
Yeah.
Harry says it's even more that this junk trader has more than the Borg had.
Yeah, more junk, more tech than the Borg.
They've collected more than the Borg, and Seven is like, yes.
Everyone needs Borg humor.
Yes. And Seven's like, yes, but most of this is useless. So Seven's like, this is junk.
Right.
And then Paris sees, he goes, wait, you know, expand that. Look right over there. He sees this old shuttle.
Yeah.
And Paris is obsessed suddenly with this vintage Delta Quadrant shuttle that he sees in the junkyard. He even says at the end, I think I'm in love. Which I just thought, again, I thought, like, where is this coming from? Like,
yeah, but you played it great because you were so, I mean, you didn't even look at us. You were locked onto that view screen. You're looking at the astrometric screen and you just say, I think I'm in love. It was under your breath. I think you played it perfectly. And
oh, thank you.
It was believable to me completely. And then plus our reactions. Did you notice Seven and our reactions also validated your
fury. There's some good comedy in this, and there's some good moments.
Yeah.
And I will say, as we go through it again, I'm not critical necessarily of my performance. It's not like I'm like, oh, I really messed that scene up and that scene. Mm-hmm. I actually think, you know, generally my performance and the other guest stars and everyone's performance is good. Mm-hmm. My struggle in this episode is I'm just not invested in the stakes of the story. I don't feel the context of why is Paris suddenly in this story. I know he's into, you know, vintage stuff or 20th century stuff, but it just feels like it's not specific enough in this episode of why he's becoming obsessed about this suddenly.
Okay.
You know, anyway. I think there's a bunch of missing scenes, I guess.
It still made sense to me. I was able to, you know, I was able to work it out of my head. So,
okay. Go to the briefing room next. Chakotay is there. Harry's there. Neelix, Paris. And they're talking about some kind of inexpensive cultural artifacts that they might take. Paris is showing, then brings up the shuttle. And he jumps up from the table.
Well, it wasn't just the cultural artifacts. Let's just be clear. It's also all the other items we want to trade for that we can use on the ship. You know.
Yes, there's some other stuff.
Right.
And then there's some of these junky artifacts, which are going to come up later. Anyway, so Paris says to Chakotay, and there's the shuttle. And he starts showing the schematics up on the side panel. And he talks about the optronic weapon systems that they have. With this neurogenic interface. So there is a part of this shuttle that's something that could be kind of cool. You know, it ties right into the pilot's thoughts. So it could be more maneuverable. It could help our technology quite a bit. It could even be, you know, it could be better than the Delta Flyer, or we could use this technology in the Delta Flyer. So, you know, he's into it.
Did that remind you of anything when they talked about that technology?
Optronic interface. No, what?
It just reminded me of, I think on certain U.S. attack helicopters, that the helmet of the pilots, the visor,
they've got like a heads up.
The visor, if the pilot looks to the right, the guns will move to the right too. Like it tracks whatever they look. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, wow.
So there's a little bit of that neural interface there with modern day technology as well. That's what I thought about. Yeah.
Interesting.
But you're definitely, Paris is definitely making an impassioned plea for this vessel to be one of the things that we trade for. And I love how he says, I will do all the restoration on my own time. Plus, if I need any help, Harry has already agreed to help. And then I just liked our little interaction there.
Yeah,
you're just obsessed. You want it.
And what we're trading for is Paris has offered up his audio file collection, basically he says, yeah, it's my jukebox.
Yeah.
So
I'd love to see all the titles in that collection.
The songs in that collection.
Yeah, I'd like to know. You know what?
Where did he keep this jukebox? Why didn't we see that in his quarters ever?
I know.
Or why didn't he put it in mess hall for everybody to use his 20th century jukebox? That would have been awesome.
I know. Here's a long-term homework project for you.
Yes.
Come up with those titles. And then we can say Tom's playlist, and we can post that online.
Okay.
I think people will be really excited to see
his jukebox.
His
20th century jukebox.
His 20th century jukebox. What songs? Okay. And you have you have a pretty good grasp of music as a human being. And I think you'd be able to pull out everything and put that on online.
All right.
We are in the corridor now. And yes. Abaddon is debriefing Tom about this derelict vessel that he is now the owner of, basically. And Neelix is there too. And they do a walk and talk towards the transporter room. And it's a great scene. There's a lot of energy to it. Everything's moving. All the lines are are coming out fast and furious. And when they're in the transporter room.
Abaddon does say that this shuttle is special. It's like a daughter to him.
Yes.
And I think that's, a little clue that Abaddon's already had this experience that Paris is about to have of this very special shuttle.
Yeah.
And he says all trades are final.
Yes.
He also says that.
That's the one more thing that he has in the transporter room. But Neelix guesses it. Neelix says, let me guess, all trades are final. So it's Neelix in his trader knowledge. He knows what the deal is.
Yep.
And I love Neelix's little laugh at the end after Abaddon points at him. He's like, yep, you got it. Neelix has this little joyful laugh, sort of like he guessed the clue on the game show correctly. So he was pretty happy about that.
We have a little space flyby of Voyager here. And I noticed the nacelles looked very bright.
Brighter than usual?
I don't know why that is. I don't know why, but they definitely seemed bright.
I thought that
blue.
Was all stock footage, though.
You would think it would almost always be the same. But in this one, I was like, I particularly noticed, maybe it was the angle. Hmm. I was like, whoa, those nacelles look pretty bright.
Okay.
But we go from space into the shuttle bay, and Harry and Tom are there working on Alice.
Yeah.
Tom named the shuttle that. Harry says you should name it a lost cause.
Right.
Which I thought was funny. Also, Harry's sleeves are rolled up.
I know.
I'm always like, whenever I see one of us with our sleeves rolled up, I'm like, oh, this must be real serious work.
This is serious work.
They're
getting... You're going to roll up those sleeves.
And did you see we had grease on our faces?
Yeah.
We had like grease. I'm like, wait a minute. What shuttle in the Delta Quadrant
uses
grease to lubricate it? It makes no sense. And if it was in space, why is it covered in dust? And I get why if it was Christine, the Stephen King novel.
The critique begins.
I was just like, there's no grease. There's no dust. It just doesn't make any sense. Maybe on the inside, it could have been, there could be some debris or something, but I don't know. Dust is organic.
Yes.
An organic thing.
I hear you. Critiques aside, I still like this scene between us. I think it's a good
scene.
It's a good scene.
I just wish we didn't have grease.
I hear you.
You had fancy hair in this, by the way. Poofy, extra poofy hair.
Yeah.
That note's a little lower, but
It's not as poofy as Anson Mount's Pike's hair, but it is. There's some poof
but it's
in
poofy.
There. Yeah.
Yes.
The biggest issue with this vessel is that there are damaged power cells everywhere. Okay. And in talking about the fact that that Tom has named this shuttle Alice, and Harry says, how about the lost cause? That's when Tom goes into the story about Alice Battisti, this young lady he met back in his academy days, mm-hmm. who was sexy, smart, and wouldn't give him the time of day. So this is the influence of this is the person who influenced the name of this shuttle, basically. Tom tries on the neurogenic interface for the first time when he's inside the shuttle.
Thing that comes around, wraps around,
comes around, and it, you know, works for a few seconds, but two more power cells blow out, and Tom eagerly wants to reconfigure their power distribution grid. Harry is tired and wants to go to bed. Tom finally relents. But what I did make note of is I just love the use of shadows and darkness during this scene, which we typically don't have. Everything is always so well lit on Voyager, but a lot of shadows. And I liked David Livingston's, you know, camera angles and everything.
They had to play this room dark because after Tom and Harry leave,
that's when
the camera pans back over in the darkness and the shuttle comes to life. It wakes up.
And it would not be as impactful if it was super bright lighting and then it just the cockpit lights up, correct?
Yep.
So it was for effect that it started off so dark. But I thought it worked. I mean, I loved it. I really liked the darkness.
Yeah, it was very cool. It comes to life. It wakes up and we see inside a cut inside the shuttle. We see the shuttle computer is now analyzing Tom's brain.
Oh, I know. That was freaky. And it's starting to analyze, you know, it's starting to find its own voice, right?
Yes, and then you hear this female voice sort of appear.
Right, but it's almost the female voice of your voice is what I kind of felt that it was doing. It was taking your voice and turning it into a female voice and saying the same lines that you were saying when you said goodnight. I think you said goodnight, goodnight, Alice, or something like that.
Yeah. Something like that, and it sort of repeats it and then evolves it into this creepy female voice.
Creepy.
We go into Tom's quarters and he's there, and then suddenly he hears a woman's voice.
And he's not sleeping. He's still up. He's working on a pad, and he hears the voice.
Yes, he hears this voice. He thinks it's B'Elanna for a moment. He calls B'Elanna and he goes outside to the corridor. He hears the voice again. He looks down and sees a woman rounding a corner.
Before you round the corner, it looked like you had a cut on your lip. In that scene.
I noticed that. Yeah.
Did you notice that? I was like, what happened? I don't know what happened there, but it was definitely noticeable. I saw that.
But then you didn't see it again.
Yeah. Then it was gone. So I was like, I don't know what happened. Yeah. Maybe one of your kids kicked you in the mouth by mistake. I don't know how that got there, but
yeah, I noticed there a little I mean, there was some inconsistency in Tom Paris's makeup throughout. The beard got long. Then it was all of a sudden shorter, you know, it was different.
Yeah,
there was definitely some, I liked the look with the, you know, not shaving and stuff like that. I thought it was a good look for Tom, but
close to what you got right now, actually.
Yeah, exactly. But it wasn't consistent. And so it kept taking me out of it. I kept focusing in on, the beard's changed. The looks changed.
Take us back to the corridor. He sees.
Yeah, we go back in the corridor. He hears the voice. It's not B'Elanna. There's no one out there. He looks, hears it again. He looks down and this woman is rounding a corner.
Yeah.
He sees her from behind. So he starts following her. And he follows this mystery woman all the way to the shuttle bay. And then he steps inside and we don't see what he looks at. And you just.
I like that. I like that.
I did too. Yeah. You don't see who he's looking at. And he says, who are you? And you hear that creepy female voice. It's me, Alice. That's the name he gave the shuttle. So we know the shuttle is kind of coming to life and there's some mystery woman, but we can't put it together. And so that's the end of the act. The next day, Paris comes back in. It's morning. He says, good morning, Alice. He starts cleaning it up.
Then we start hearing music that sort of accompanies a montage slash a working kind of thing, getting work done.
Yes, it was old school kind of like, I like the score, but it was very old school. Dun, 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 dun. It was like
it was that kind sort of like the A-Team or like you were doing, Raiders of the Lost Ark, like something's happening. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was good music.
Old school, good action music.
Cleaning it up, shining, polishing. And then it ends with him revealing this gray flight suit.
Silvery gray is what
silvery gray, not flattering, I'm just going to say.
No.
It looked like I was wearing a parachute.
It just was
It was bad.
It was one of the dumpiest looking uniforms I've ever seen you wear. I'm going to say that right.
It was not a good look.
No.
And he seems so happy, though.
Yes.
About it. He's very proud of this parachute he's wearing.
Oh, yeah.
We go into engineering and we see Harry climbing up a ladder in his Buster Kincaid outfit.
Yep. On the second floor, or the mezzanine of engineering.
Comes to find Tom, and Tom's still wearing the parachute.
Working on a console.
And by the way, we see Tom from behind, and I noticed as it panned over and revealed Tom there, that I have panty lines. I can see them. I can see the panty lines through the parachute, and I'm very humiliated.
Oh, no.
I don't understand.
Okay, I'm going to say 99.999% of fans who are watching this will not make note of or even be aware of your panty lines. Exactly. You are so critical, which is, but I love it. I love it when your eye just goes to these crazy things. It makes me happy inside.
It's an unflattering suit that show. I don't even know if it was panty lines, but it just had weird lines.
Okay.
I don't understand it. Right. Anyway, Harry's like, Tom, we need you in the holodeck for Captain Proton. Like, come on, let's go, dude. Arachnia needs you. But Tom obsessed.
Yes. Well, Harry basically has two questions for you. Number one, who are you talking to? Because you're talking to Alice while you're working at the console. And secondly, what are you wearing? Because he thinks that you've changed the outfit for Captain Proton. But Harry reminds him, you know, that we had a holodeck appointment, chapter 37, and then The Web of Pain, which sounds like a really fun chapter.
But Tom
completely forgets about the appointment. Not only that, he just kind of blows him off, just bails on Harry entirely. Yeah. And look at, did you see the absolutely, you dismiss me, and I just have that look of sadness at the very end. I'm pretty
very disappointed.
I was very disappointed in you. And the way I turned and walked away, it made me LOL. I was laughing at that. So,
by the way, where's B'Elanna in engineering? Like, he's there in this weird suit talking to another woman, right in engineering. Like, what an idiot.
You should have been whispering. You should have been, now, Alice, this is what. Yeah, that would have been a little bit better. Because even if she isn't there, there are other engineering
personnel
that would say, hey, your boyfriend was talking to this random thing. And he's kind of gone off the deep end.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Are we done with the scene?
Yeah, we go to mess hall next. Seven enters and finds Neelix. She wants a refund.
Yeah, those star charts.
Star charts obsolete. Yes. This is junk.
Yeah.
And Neelix says, not only that is that junk, but there's more things that are worthless.
Yeah, the cultural artifacts are worthless.
All these cultural artifacts are worthless.
Yeah.
And then Seven says, well, that crystal.
Well, she picks it up there, and she wipes the dust off. And the dust from space. The space dust.
Pixie
and
dust.
And then immediately she sees this beryllium crystal.
Yes, very valuable. She says it's the primary currency in Spatial Grid 539.
That's right. The species, There are species in Spatial Grid 539 that will trade an entire fleet of starships for this crystal.
Yeah.
So Neelix is like, well, Abaddon would never have traded that for a few plasma couplings. So Neelix starts debating whether he should return it. And Seven says, need I remind you, all trades are final. And I started thinking, now, wait a minute. She wasn't even in the engineering. She wasn't even in the transporter room. Yeah, she wasn't even in that scene where he says all trades are final. But maybe that's just, you know, maybe there's a shipwide newsletter. Yeah, that goes out to everyone that says Abaddon leaves and he tells us all trades are final. And that's how she knows. That's the only way I can justify that.
Paris enters, though. He wants to replicate some champagne. He's christening Alice. And he says he's going to have a private ceremony with B'Elanna.
Yeah.
And Neelix then suggests a double date.
He starts talking about his ship the first time he saw it, the Baxiel, right?
Yes,
and that's what Baxiel suggests the double date.
He suggests maybe we can have a double date with
Give us Paris's great line at the end.
What is it? I didn't write it down.
Oh, it is. You pack the picnic basket, I'll bring the deuterium, is what you say. So
always clever, that Tom Paris.
You're not bum when I imitate Tom Paris.
No, not at all.
Okay, good. You know I love doing the Tom Paris voice. Okay.
We go to the hallway next. It's B'Elanna and Paris heading towards the shuttle bay. And Paris is like, don't be too critical, you know. You know, it's not a perfect shuttle. And B'Elanna's like, when have you known me to be too critical? And then Tom's response, he stops. Is that a trick question? I love that exchange.
This scene that begins in the corridor is really the essence of every relationship on the planet.
Yes,
it seems
very
like it's
relatable.
It's so relatable. Go ahead.
But by the way, she doesn't comment on his. She doesn't comment on his weird outfit.
Yeah, no, that doesn't come up there.
This is the first time we see that she's seen it. So maybe she's given him some crap before, but
maybe
this would be a great opportunity to talk about that, his parachute outfit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we go into the shuttle bay. The shuttle is totally cleaned up. It's shiny.
It looks great.
All good. And then we cut really inside. Good. They're opening the champagne.
Yeah.
They're sitting close and tight.
She spills a little bit of champagne. And that's when
Tom's very defensive.
He's like, wait, let me
careful of the upholstery.
And she jokes. She's like, well, let me just send an engineering crew down here to clean this up for you. She's trying to make light of the situation, but you're not laughing. You're so serious about this.
Very serious about this shuttle. Like, this is
your
mess
baby.
Around with my baby. I've cleaned this thing up.
Oh,
all the space dust. It was hard to clean up all that space dust. But they do. They're drinking champagne.
Yeah.
It starts feeling like sexy time a little bit.
It starts feeling like
Tom and B'Elanna are going to, you know, have a romantic christening of this thing. And then suddenly there's an alert and the environmental systems are not working properly. Starting to get hot in there. And he tries to correct it. He starts, all of a sudden, his attention goes from sexy time to, oh, I've got to work on this ship. He starts playing with the panels. And she's like, well, you know, maybe I could help. And he's like, no, I got this. So he's very territorial about it.
Yeah.
He's basically obsessed with this.
Yeah. But when she hears that voice, she says, well, that's some voice.
Then
Paris says right back. He's like, oh, well, are you getting jealous? And she's like, maybe. I mean, there's a little tension there.
She senses that there's something weird about Tom's connection and obsession with the shuttle.
Yes.
And he's oblivious to it.
He has
and
no
she,
clue.
And she realizes, like, okay, sexy time is over. I'm going to get out of here.
Well, she says basically to you, well, maybe I should just leave the two of you alone. And then you don't even look at B'Elanna. You're like, yeah, okay. Cause you're still trying to make all the adjustments.
Yeah.
And you're okay with her leaving you. And it was just, I was watching that going, oh my gosh, Tom is crashing and burning. We've all seen this, or we've all experienced this in our own relationships too. You know, this type of thing where one of the significant others is preoccupied or distracted by something. And this is exactly what happens. And
well, then with B'Elanna, she starts to leave and then she gets shocked.
Alice,
like this Alice shocks her
on purpose. Basically.
On purpose.
It's like, yo, girly, you know, you better not,
you know,
touch my
here.
Man. Yeah, exactly. I'm Tom Paris's lady, not you.
We go to Chakotay's quarters next though. So that was a disaster. The christening
Yeah, Christine was horrible. Time. We have the exterior space shot of Voyager, and now we're in Chakotay's quarters.
Going to Chakotay's quarters, and Paris is pacing. He's amped up. He wants
supplies. Looks like he's a crack addict. Yes. Looking for his next fix is what he looks like. He's just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. He's a little Beavis and Butthead-ish. He's very tense.
Very distracted. Chakotay's like, you know what? You're getting a little obsessed about this. You've been late for your shift. You've been distracted on the bridge.
Yeah.
You know, obvious signs that you're just overdoing it.
Yeah. And also all the things you're requesting, you ask for 30 meters of EPS conduit, a broadband sensor matrix, a tactical data module. And Chakotay says, well, we have those things, but we can't spare these parts because they are emergency supplies. Mm-hmm. And Tom is like, well, okay, but they're spare parts. And Chakotay goes, yeah, but they're for an emergency. This is an emergency.
For us, yes.
Yeah. So
it's
Tom
too
says,
much. You're asking
fine,
for too much.
I'll replicate them. I can replicate the parts. And Chakotay says, well, that takes energy. And we are in short supply of that also. Mm-hmm. And Chakotay is being as nice as he can be to you. He says, well, maybe in a few weeks, if we can replenish our power reserve, then we can replicate those parts. And hearing this is just like the end of Tom's world. He's like, well, what am I going to do until then? I mean, that's his first sort of outburst that he has. And Chakotay says, well, maybe you can do your job. And Tom's like, huh? And he's like, you've been late to two shifts in sick bay. You've been distracted on the bridge. You look run down. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should stop by sick bay and have the doctor check you out. Tom says, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I haven't been getting enough sleep. And Chakotay says, well, look, I would suggest that you turn in early since your next duty shift isn't until 0700. Tom says, well, that's a good idea, and starts to leave. And that's when Chakotay stops him and says one more thing. And it's interesting. We have one more thing in the transporter room, and that's all sails are final. And then we have one more thing in this scene, and he wants Tom to shave and put his Starfleet uniform back on. The only person to make any comment about that suit, other than Harry asking what the heck he's wearing. So he leaves, but clearly he does not go to sleep.
No, he goes the shuttle bay.
Straight to his girlfriend, Alice, exactly, to give her the bad news.
And this is when we have this moment. He walks in, we see the shuttle is there. As he heads over, the camera wraps around a 360 and reveals the actress in human form.
Yeah.
So it's what Tom is seeing. He's seeing this woman. Mm-hmm. He's seeing Alice as a human.
Yeah.
And then Tom starts to undo this new suit. Did you see this? What is he going to do? He's going to like strip right there in the shuttle bay. And like, I was like, what?
He's going to walk out with his t-shirt and boxer briefs. That's what you're going to do.
That's his panty lines.
Yeah. And, but the bad news is he has to put the test flight on hold. And, like you said, he tries to take off the suit, but she tells him not to keep it on. And she tells him to ignore protocol. She asks him to activate the neural interface. And this is when she gets into his brain and basically compels Tom to continue with the repairs.
Continue. So we cut inside the shuttle. Mm-hmm. And that's when he notices we jumped a little bit later, a little time cut. He's sitting in the pilot seat.
Yeah.
And she has made some modifications to his garment so that they can work together.
Yeah, there's some extra inputs that showed up in the top of his uniform that we're not sure what they do, but we know that there's something nefarious.
Just tightening this connection that they have.
All right, so we jump from the shuttle bay to a scene in one of the vertical Jefferies tubes, because we have horizontal and vertical. Tom is climbing up a ladder to get to a part of the Jefferies tube that has a power cell. And this is when Alice also appears in human form and starts talking to him. And basically there's a little bit,
is this the close talking scene?
This is close talking. And she says, what's wrong? And you say something. And she says, you're not being honest with me. I thought we agreed to tell each other everything. And then you come out with it. You're saying, well, you still have a conscience. You feel bad. You said, we're compromising vital systems. And, you know, she says, well, they're just kind of backup systems. And Tom's like, well, we still will need them if there's an emergency. And then she goes on to say, sometimes you just have to leave your family behind. You know, you don't belong here. You belong with me. Yeah. And she knows what he's thinking, everything. So then she asks about his first flight. You remember how that was? And mm-hmm. he starts talking about that. So she's really kind of just, she's got her fangs in just deep into Tom Paris.
Yeah. He recalls his first flight and the exhilaration that he felt.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Furthering the bond.
Between them. And she says, remember that feeling? You're going to feel that and more
on our
first flight the next day. So she's really kind of, brainwashing him here for sure. And by the way, okay. So then we go to astrometrics and my beard seems to be less like we go in this.
I didn't notice that.
Jeffrey's tube scene where it's really close with a good beard. And then we go to astrometrics. I'm like, where did my beard go? Did I go groom a little in between the Jeffrey's tube? Anyway.
Your superpower today is you are critique man. And yes. I did not notice that it was less in this.
The
scene.
Beard was less. But
I just
anyway,
noticed Tom's, that you were being super shady.
Yeah, he's being shady. Yeah. He's got some kind of course. We see this red
charting
line.
A course.
He's charting a course. But then the door opens at 7 and he quickly deletes it. He erases the course.
Puts the screensaver on.
Puts the screensaver on and then he lies and said he was just curious about this. I don't even know what he was curious about. He just came in.
No, he just said, I was just curious. Checking things out.
She's like, you don't belong
in here. Window shopping.
I just came in. I was just curious about astrometrics, I guess, in general.
Yeah. Seven's very skeptical of everything. She's just looking at you like, wait a minute.
She's like, what's up with your flight suit?
You were assigned. Yeah. Were you assigned to astrometrics and looking at his suit? Yeah. And
she's critiquing the suit. She's talking about, this.
Maybe it should be tested because, it has a neural interface.
Yeah. This neurogenic interface could be dangerous. Mm-hmm. And she says she'd do it herself.
Yeah.
And then in this scene, again, David does this sort of wraparound move. David Livingston, where all of a sudden Alice is in astrometrics with us, but she's Seven can't see her, but Tom is seeing her.
Right.
And
it's a good reveal though. I like the reveal though.
It's a good reveal. She's there, telling him to avoid her questions. Don't tell her what's going on.
Making a quick excuse, get out of there. So she's coaching him every step.
Coaching him. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the camera continues to move. And then suddenly Alice is gone. So I think it's a great idea. What David Livingston did here, it's really well done, well executed. And it also takes the actress who plays Alice to be able to run around behind the camera and then jump into place just for the reveal, as if she's just been standing there the whole time. It's a challenging kind of acting exercise to be able to do that. I thought she did a great job.
She did. And, pretty much only in sci-fi do we see these kind of things, it seems, or horror movies.
You know what's funny? It just reminded me, I did this same bit in Resident Alien.
Did you?
Recently. Yes. I don't want to give it away because it hasn't been on the air yet.
But
there was a moment where a character sort of disappears and then reappears on the other side of the room. And I did the same bit. Where the camera panned around, the actress had to run around behind the camera. And so it's a fun, it's a fun way for the camera department and the shot making to interact with the actors and tell the story.
And the actors get a little bit of a workout,
exactly.
Physical activity, a little physical exertion. There's some steps. All right. So now we jump to engineering and Kim is testing the regulators that we have received from Abaddon. Mm-hmm. They seem to be working. Torres is there and Harry kind of detects that there's a little bit of something going on. And Torres talks about, she had a bad night with Tom and she complains that every time Tom finds a new hobby, she goes right out the airlock. I just love that writing by Taylor and Fuller on this one. And Harry tells her not to take it personally. He goes on to say that the Ferengi call it the five stages of acquisition, infatuation, justification, appropriation, obsession, and resale. And that there is only one stage left when it comes to Tom, and he's going to be all yours again. After he's past that stage, he'll give up all of his interest.
He's in the obsession stage now.
He's in the obsession stage. He'll soon be in the resale stage. And Torres then notices a 0.003 drop in the warp field output. Mm-hmm. And Harry says, well, that's within the norm. And she says, well, not on my watch. And she discovers that somebody has removed four power cells from the secondary warp assembly without authorization. Kim checks into it a little bit more and says, whoever did this tried to cover their tracks by rerouting power from adjacent cells. So he asks Torres if he should report this to Tuvok. And Torres says, don't even bother. It's an open and shut case. And she storms out because she knows.
Yeah, she's heading to the shuttle bay.
She knows, yeah. Yeah.
I love when B'Elanna comes into the shuttle bay, she's like, Tom Paris.
I wanted her to use your full name. Thomas Eugene Paris, you are in trouble.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She's looking for him. She goes over to by the shuttle. She finds a missing tool over there.
Which is one of her tools, actually, taken without permission.
She goes inside. He's not there. And as she turns to leave, the door shuts.
Yeah.
She can't get out.
She's trapped.
It locks her in. All of a sudden, there's life support failure. Yeah. She starts gasping for breath. Yeah. Tom comes in.
To see her banging on the...
Banging.
And losing dying, consciousness.
Losing consciousness. He opens the door. She gets some oxygen and
well,
she
you
runs.
Ask her. You say, what are you doing here? And she just pushes past you and get out of there and get air. And she's so angry.
She says, the ship tried to kill me.
Yes. And that's in the corridor that she says that, because she's already in the corridor at this point. Tom catches up with her, and that's when she says, your ship tried to kill me. He says, that's ridiculous. They start arguing about all this recent behavior.
I like this scene.
It was a great scene. It's a really, really good scene.
Really intense scene. And Tom's trying to physically stop her.
Oh my God. You got so loud in this one.
I was like, listen to me.
You scared me.
Oh, good. Well,
you scared me. It's like,
but I think this is part of that. This is the rock bottom, I guess.
It was necessary. But I'm just saying that I've never seen you personally that loud in my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, in terms of your interactions, but you still, like, you have the potential to get that loud.
Yeah.
If something gets to you that much and you lose it,
it's kind of like if I'm at a Georgia Bulldogs football game and the other team gets away with cheating, like Alabama.
You get loud then?
I get loud.
Well, you know, I've seen you. You get very vocal, and you're a pacer. You walk back and forth. I don't even think a chair needs, if you're ever at a party and people have watching a Georgia game, you can come in and say, I don't need a chair.
I don't need a pace.
I'm going to pace this entire
time. That's what I did in this scene in the hallway. It was like I was at a Georgia game.
Yes. And she was the official ref that made the call in favor of Alabama. Yes. And boy, you laid it into her. Yes,
I did. but yes, I yell at her, stay out of this, B'Elanna.
Yeah.
And then suddenly Alice is there.
Yeah.
Tom is freaking out.
Yeah. B'Elanna says she's going to go talk to the captain. And Alice says, let her go. And Tom says to Alice, you almost killed B'Elanna. And now the first argument between Tom and Alice happens.
Yes.
And Alice says, well, B'Elanna broke into my database and was about to discover the flight plan. And Tom says, well, maybe then it's time that she did discover it. And again, back and forth, arguing. And Tom is realizing for the first time the danger that Alice poses to not only himself, but to his loved one. And so he's trying to get away from her. And he wants to go to sickbay.
This is over.
Yeah, because she says, well, if they just have to do one scan of you on sickbay and realize what's going on. And Tom's like, fine, then it's done. We're going to do this. And he starts trying to get away from Alice. Alice follows him. He gets into the turbo lift, and another cool reveal that she's right there. She's immediately there.
She's everywhere.
You can't get away. Tom requests sick bay. The turbo lift begins its journey to sick bay, but Alice starts to remind him of how he felt when he first saw her, the first time he interacted with her.
And he's trying to resist. He's trying to get to sick bay.
He wants to end.
And then she puts like blue veins in his head.
She blue veined you.
She blue veined me. It's like these VisiFX. It was like a big migraine headache. Yeah. You know,
That's her ace in the hole. That's her ace card in the hole that she used. That's the last resort move, which is give you this aneurysm kind of thing. Yeah. And you're in pain. It obviously hurts a lot.
Yeah, I fell to the floor. Tom falls to the floor.
But you say no. You still say no. So then she gives you a bigger jolt, a bigger shock, more blue vein.
And lots of screaming in this scene.
Yeah, big scream.
Very emotional sequence all the way from finding B'Elanna in the shuttle dying to...
Yes.
Blue veining in the turbolift.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But you comply. Paris complies at the end. He does say, let's deck 10 shuttle bay. So they head right back there. Mm-hmm. We cut to the ready room, and Torres is having a conversation with Janeway. She's stating her case. Ever since Tom has been working on Alice, he hasn't slept. He's become irritable, irrational. This neurogenic interface has some kind of effect on him, is what Janeway deduces. And so just as Janeway tells Torres that she'll have the doctor take a look at Tom, we hear Chakotay's voice on the comm, yes, notifying Janeway that we have an unauthorized launch in progress.
No, it's guess happening.
Who? Guess who? So we jump to the bridge. Chakotay orders Harry to seal the shuttle bay doors. It's too late. Tom and Alice, they're already out. Janeway orders a tractor beam. Now it cuts to the interior of Alice, and Paris says that they're trying to tractor us. Alice says, stop them. And Tom says he can't. She says, well, you'll be able to maneuver better if you complete the interface by activating the connector sequence. So Tom hesitates. He does it. All of a sudden, these tubule cables shoot out of the chair.
They're glow sticks.
The glow sticks come out and it's attach like to you.
Long, skinny glow sticks.
You come are out. Going to a rave is what you're about to go to. So, yes,
the glow sticks come out and they hug him around his chest.
Yep. Yep. And well, not that many. There's like three that come out.
There's like three or four.
Later, more, but then now there's three. And so now these nodes, they connect to the little glow sticks. And Tom, all of a sudden, he realizes, he says, I can disrupt the tractor beam with an optronic pulse. And she's like, well, all right, go ahead. We jump back to the bridge. Tuvok says, he's powering weapons. Chakotay orders full power to the shields. Torres, who is on the bridge now, reports
which
that-
Which she normally isn't, but she's not, up on the bridge, up at that center console. Mm-hmm. I love that center console. We should use that more often.
We should. She reports that Tom is disrupting the tractor beam. Janeway says to increase power to emitters, but he breaks free. And Janeway orders Tom to stand down, return to Voyager. We cut back to Alice, and Tom is just completely brainwashed. He says, mm-hmm, I can't. I'm with Alice now. Let us go. And Janeway says, you know that I can't let you do that. And that's when Alice says to Tom that Janeway would do anything to get him back, and he must stop her, and that he knows how to do that. So then
she actually says, you know, your captain will do anything to get you back. I don't blame her for that. She's like flattering him, and this with the glow sticks and the blue veins and all, you're gonna try flattery.
Yes, flattery.
It seems to work.
Brad, we could cut to the bridge, and Kim says, he's coming about. Tom fires at Voyager, direct hit, and then just shoots the warp. Janeway says, track him, but we cannot because
he's gone.
Tom has masked his warp signature. He's gone, exactly. Him and the glow sticks.
We have a little time cut. We see a space POV of like warp stars flying by. Yeah. And I thought, is that warp 11? Did I break the warp barrier again? Because it was a different kind of warp look.
Okay.
I feel like Tom's, he's doing it. Maybe he wants to be a lizard or a salamander.
There were times when I was watching this episode that I got sort of suggestions of Threshold in a way. You know, I was it reminded me of Threshold.
With a similar sort of obsession an obsession story.
Yeah, an obsession about flying a shuttle story, basically, right?
Yes, so, very similar.
Yeah, just a little bit repackaged on this one. So now we see in the interior that there are even more glow sticks.
More glow sticks wrapped around.
And then somehow Alice starts reciting the myth of Daedalus fashioning wings of wax and feathers, escaping his prison, which is one of Tom's favorite myths. And
I never
and Tom
knew that.
Says that. Tom said, well, now you do. Tom says, that's one of my favorite myths. And she goes, I know, because she knows everything you're thinking.
Yeah.
And it's just, again, you look like a Borg. There's so much stuff going out in and out of you. You're starting to look
glow stick. I'm a rave Borg.
You're a rave Borg is what you are.
So many glow sticks.
And then you make the comment that your arms feel numb.
Arms can't move. And by the way, when my arms can't move, and when you look down at the cutaway to the insert of my hands trying to move, that's not my hands.
It's not your hand, is it? I knew it.
No.
They use someone else's hand.
They use somebody else for the insert. They would often do that. They'd shoot all of the dialogue in our faces. But if it was something that didn't involve faces, they'd do that later with the second unit with stand-ins and photo doubles.
I didn't like that, honestly, because did that bother you? Did that ever bother you?
I don't know. It didn't. It bothered me a little bit. I mean, now that I've directed a lot more and I much prefer filming the real actors doing
this. Yes, agreed.
Because there is some story and there's some detail in the way that the real actor would do it.
Yeah.
and not a photo double, but that was a photo double with the hands. Yeah. Here.
And I would always notice when they did not use my hands, because they would try to bring in, I don't know if they did it for you, but they brought in various people to compare their hands to mine and try to pick one. And my hands, my fingers are so long and slender that it's very hard to duplicate that. So I always can see when it's not my hand. It kind of bugs me that it's not my hand.
There were a couple inserts in this episode that was not my hands for sure.
Okay. So his arms feel numb, and Alice says, "Who needs arms when you have wings?" And so she says they're connected now. And she tells him to forget the old Tom Paris. He no longer exists. This is the new Tom Paris, melded with me, Alice. Basically, instead of Tom, you are, what are you? Alam.
Alice.
Alam. I'm trying to mix Alice and Tom together. Alam.
Alam or Tallis. Tallis.
Tallis. It sounds like you're saying Tomless. The tallest. Tomless. That's better. You are Tomless in this one. Okay.
Yes.
We jump to the bridge. Abaddon is now on the view screen. We clearly, Voyager has traveled back to the junkyard now. And he says, my policy, no refunds. Janeway says she doesn't want a refund, just information. Abaddon, and again, really, I love the writing here. Abaddon says, that's one commodity that I don't keep in stock and that he should look elsewhere. And she says, well, I'm not going elsewhere until I get some answers. And Abaddon then says, well, I'm prepared to deal with disgruntled customers. Again, love the writing here. Tuvok then reads active weapon signatures on three of the derelict ships that are now targeting Voyager. And Janeway says, well, before we take actions, we may both regret. Mr. Neelix has something to show you. Neelix then shows him the beryllium crystal, which Abaddon by mistake traded in. And he says, listen, and Abaddon clearly recognizes the value of this crystal.
Yes.
And Neelix says, in exchange for some information, I will return this to you, which is too good of a deal to pass up. The next scene is in the briefing room. Tuvok begins the scene by saying, haunted. And Abaddon says, well, that's what the Harconian. Harconian? Yeah.
Yeah.
Harconian. Abaddon says, that's what the Harconian who traded the ship to me said. So, there's already this history of this ship being a little weird. Chakotay asked Abaddon if he noticed anything odd about the ship. And as Abaddon begins to talk about his experiences with the ship, he then sees Alice, who now looks like it on the form of his species. Yes. A female from his own species. And immediately, good job by our guest star. He is absolutely frightened. He says, I will return everything that I received in trade for the ship and no questions asked. And I will just, and then he demands to be transported back to his junkyard. But Alice then blue veins him and he falls down to the ground and he's again blue veined a second time. And he then has an aneurysm and collapses. He's out.
Now, the thing I wonder here is, I get like metaphorically that she's, that he was haunted by her and she's, but like from a technology standpoint, isn't it the shuttle interface is the thing, like the shuttle's nowhere around and he's not connected anymore. The shuttle's connected to Tom. Why is it doing it to him? It doesn't like from
because she already imprinted him. She'd already restructured his brain when he was connected. So
but
he's
is
already
that permanent.
Yes. I think so. Until it's reversed by a doctor and reversed by the doctor. Exactly. That's what I got. You felt it was more of a hole in the script though.
The doctor, well, let's go to the next scene and maybe this will help us if we talk through it, but we go to sick bay and the doctor is able to fix the cerebral hemorrhage he had in the briefing room. And he says that Alice did create this connection and that's, she's the cause of this cerebral hemorrhage. And he gives him a cortical suppressant to prevent him from having any more of these hallucinations.
Oh, well, but then that means if the suppressant wears off, he can still be affected by her.
That's
what
I'm saying.
Like, so it's permanent.
If it's permanent, then why isn't Tom like, this is permanent for Tom too. It's happening.
Well,
I
guess you have to take your cortical suppressant pill every day, once a day.
I guess so. It just seemed to me like it would be cleaner if it was just the one-on-one connection.
Yeah.
But I get why they needed Abaddon to have this hallucination. I just don't get then why Tom doesn't have the same permanent effects, but
maybe we should ask Brian Fuller.
I'm sure they've got a reason. I'm sure they talked through
it. Yes.
It's got to be this quarter. Maybe the cortical suppressant is a one-time thing.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, he had never thought of that before, Abaddon, and now the doctor fixed him up and he's good to go.
Possibly. Okay. Possibly. But then Janeway asks Abaddon, you know, what does this ship want with our crewmen? And Abaddon says, well, the ship cannot fly herself. She needs a pilot, a biological entity to work in tandem with her programming. And Janeway says, well, if all she needed was a pilot, why didn't she just use you? And Abaddon said he wasn't
compatible. Because he's not Tom Paris.
He's not. His reflexes are too slow.
He's slow.
He's like a turtle.
He's not a good pilot.
He's not a good pilot.
For those that think Tom is not the greatest pilot of all time, this episode.
Just ask Alice.
Just ask Alice. She found the only pilot that could possibly get her to the particle fountain that she's looking for. Abaddon was no good. She needed a better pilot. She found Tom.
Right.
And
she
he
also
apologizes
said,
in the end. He does say, you know, I'm sorry. I should have warned you about this, but he couldn't resist the influence of this hallucination.
And he says that basically Alice needs a pilot to take her to this final destination. He doesn't know where this destination is. He doesn't have the coordinates. Alice never told him. Alice only told him find her a real pilot, a real man like Tom Paris. So the end of the scene is Seven chimes in. You can hear Seven on the comms telling Captain Janeway to report to Astrometrics. And this is where Seven reveals to Janeway that she has reconstructed the data from Ensign Paris, the data that he was inputting into the computer there. And
his shady little move.
Yeah, she unearthed the shade. She shone light on the shade and realized that the course trajectory leads to a point in spatial grid 867. Janeway says it looks uninhabited. Seven says, well, it is empty space with the exception of one small anomaly. And Janeway notices that it's a particle fountain. And that the Federation has lost more than a dozen ships examining a similar phenomenon in the Alpha Quadrant. So she says, relay the coordinates to the bridge. We cut to Alice, the interior of Alice. And Alice says, take us out of warp. And she says, can you see it now? And Tom says, yes, what is it? And Alice looking at, and they're both looking at the particle fountain. Alice says, home. So now, this is what I don't get. A particle fountain is super dangerous. How is this Alice's home? I mean, I need to talk to Brian Fuller.
Is
I need to know.
Supernatural of something? Do they live in a particle fountain?
Was Alice a crew member of a ship that was destroyed in the particle fountain and turned into a ghost? And then she sort of inhabited the ship, this shuttle that went by.
It's all very mysterious.
It is mysterious. I don't know.
The particle fountain doesn't feel like a place that any alien species would build this kind of technology, because it seems like a weird, dangerous phenomenon.
It does.
Not a place that would be home. But anyway.
But it is beautiful.
It's her home.
It looks like you are at the rave at this point. I mean, the light show is gorgeous, okay?
Yeah.
So now Voyager, we're on the Voyager bridge, and Voyager is also at the particle fountain. Janeway says distance, 6 million kilometers. Janeway says decrease speed to 1/4 impulse, full power to shields. And Tuvok detects Alice off the starboard bow, and Kim says it's Tom, headed right for the anomaly. Janeway asks if he can get a transporter lock. Kim says, no, ma'am, not with those multi-phasic shields in place. And Janeway says, are we in hailing range? Tuvok opens the channel, and Paris says, keep your distance, Captain, or we'll open fire. It's like, we will open fire. We are one. You're kind of like a Borg in a way.
Borg, I think. You know, this thing gets into your brain. And
a collective of two. So, all right. Janeway says, Tom, listen to me. This neurogenic interface, it's affecting your judgment. Drop your shields. Let us beam you aboard. We cut over to interior of Alice. We still hear Janeway talking, and she goes, let us beam you aboard.
Tom's got the glow sticks wrapped up. He can't move.
He can't move. Alice says, ignore them. Just keep going. We're back on the bridge. Kim says he's not responding. So Janeway says, target his propulsion systems and fire. Tom feels the weapons hit him because he reacts as if it was hitting him personally. Tuvok says, direct hit. Vessel's shields are holding. And Doctor quickly chimes into the bridge.
Doctor says, don't do this.
Stop firing. Yeah. Paris's neural readings are fluctuating. His synaptic functions have become linked to the ship. If we keep firing, we could injure him severely. So Janeway acknowledges this. She says to Tuvok, stand down. Kim says, we got 10 minutes until he reaches the particle fountain. Chakotay wonders if there's any way to disable their shields without firing weapons. Tuvok says, if he could access their main computer and transmit a shutdown sequence, that may be a solution. Kim goes, well, problem is Tom and Alice would detect it. They would compensate. So Janeway says, maybe we could find a way to distract them. So then she calls over to the doctor. Doctor says, go ahead. And she asks about if he's had any progress on this analysis of the neurogenic interface. And the doc says, not yet, Captain. And Janeway says, well, would it be possible to tap into the interface using a comp signal? The doctor is like, yeah.
So basically, I think a phone call in this interface.
Yes.
But Tom will think it's real life.
Correct.
He won't know it's a phone call.
He won't know it's a phone call. And the doctor is unsure of what Janeway is up to.
But he says, I think I can do it.
We can do it. And Janeway says, okay, you got 5 minutes. Get it done.
And then
Janeway goes, and tell Valana to get ready for an away mission. And Torres is like, Captain, what? An away mission? Well, a secret kind of away mission.
We go to space. We see a cool particle fountain out in space. It is a cool.
It is. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
We go to sick bay. Doc's hooking up the neural interface. Valana says it's going to be weird getting inside Tom's head, which I thought was very funny. He's like, I don't know if I want to know what my boyfriend's thinking about, which I get. I wouldn't want to be in.
Do you think she can see everything that you have thought of in the last 6 years? Can she map your brain at this point?
I think this is like,
I'm wondering.
It's a phone call.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to say that she's not. Yeah.
She's not accessing the deepest recesses of your brain at this point.
I'm going to say, I hope not.
Okay, good.
Okay. We go to the shuttle now. And I wrote down, that is a super tight close-up of Tom Paris. It's really tight on Tom as he's in this chair.
Yeah.
Then the camera pans over from Alice, you know, to see Alice there, then back to Tom. And then the next time it pans over, B'Elanna's there.
Yeah.
So they did tap in. They got the phone call to tap into the to this neurogenic hookup. And basically B'Elanna's there going, this program is tricking you. This is not real.
Alice is just a pile of circuits in the ship's computer core. You're letting a program delude you. It's just a program. Mm-hmm. Not like the doctor, who is more than a program. I have to say that because I'm getting so much flack for saying he's just a program. So he's more than Alice, that's for sure.
Janeway says, you know, we've got to do this now. B'Elanna says, I need you to Tom. And basically in this scene, Tom is seeing each of these women, you know, Alice and B'Elanna both in the shuttle. He's visualizing both of them there. And they're both trying to convince him to follow. You know, B'Elanna's saying, follow me, listen to me. Mm-hmm. Alice is saying, listen to me. Paris is like, leave me alone. No, very dramatic acting from yours truly here. While he's distracted, though.
Tuvok gets into the main computer. He accesses the main computer during this distraction.
Tuvok, and he takes the disables the shuttle shields and is able to beam Paris off of the shuttle.
Yes, but a little difficulty because there was a little interference from the particle fountain. Kim could not beam him immediately to sickbay. Chakotay boosts the confinement beam, and on the second shot, we get Tom back, and he's now in sickbay. And Tuvok reports that Alice is losing helm control and hurtles into the particle fountain. And we see
she doesn't have the best pilot in space.
She can't pilot anything without you.
Pilot
without, yeah, she goes right into the
Tom Paris.
Yes, right into the middle of the particle fountain. And the Alice is ceased to exist. Alice explodes into a gabillion pieces.
Big purple explosion. It was very pretty.
Bam. Boom.
And then Janeway's just like, okay, resume course to the Alpha Quadrant. She's like, I thought it was very funny. Off of this dramatic moment, she's like, okay, did that. Let's go to the Alpha Quadrant.
It was so, So you're so right. It was just so matter of fact. It was
Very matter of
fact. It was a throwaway line. Let's go to the off quadrant. We're done. We got Tom. He's a little cuckoo in the copa. He's a little cuckoo, but we'll fix it.
Yeah. Our very last scene, we go to sick bay. Tom is back to looking like himself. He's recovering, but the doctor says he's going to need a few days of rest and then leaves B'Elanna and Tom alone. And B'Elanna gives Tom a get well card. He opens it up.
So
it's
sweet.
It's very sweet from Naomi Wildman.
Good old Naomi. She wasn't in this episode, but she still made it in.
Again, I wish that, you know, it would have been nice if there was a scene with Tom and Naomi early on where you see, you know, I don't know. It just would have paid off emotionally for me more if there had been a little more of a bookend of why Tom went down this dark road, you know, where he was at, because it just seemed to come out of left field.
No, you're right.
So the whole journey felt a little emotionally thin to me.
Yeah.
But it was a sweet get well card. And Paris does say to B'Elanna, he goes, I'm really, really sorry. And he says he remembers everything. It was like he was sleepwalking.
Yeah.
He just wasn't in control.
He couldn't do anything. He remembers everything he said and everything he did. Mm-hmm. So even the manhandling of his lady, the yelling at her. And he apologizes. And
he apologizes.
Big apology.
And she says, he says it was like he was sleepwalking. She says, well, what matters is you woke up. And they have a nice hug there.
It is a nice little hug. And a kiss. You guys kiss. Don't you
we
kiss?
We have a nice hug and a kiss. And
Tom promises no more affairs with strange ships. B'Elanna asks, what about the Delta Flyer? Tom says, we're just friends. And then they kiss.
And then they kiss.
Yes. And that's the ending.
Gross. Kissing. Ew. Kissing.
And it was a little loud, too. It was loud. You guys are loud.
That's our reputation. We're loud.
And you're loud nookiers as well.
Yeah.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Oh my gosh. You know, I'll tell you, this is not an episode for any PT shipper. PT shippers are probably just, you know, just cringing when they're watching this. They're not happy about it.
I get it.
Okay. So what is your theme and your lesson for this episode?
I wrote down for my lesson, don't get lost in fantasy. It's pretty simple to me. It's like, you know, going down the road of like your interests, hobbies, your things that you're drawn to can cross the line into dangerous territory in fantasy that's just not real. So don't get lost in fantasy. What about you?
Similar to yours, it's in the same neighborhood. Too much of a good thing is too much. Basically, moderation is key. You really, when you obsess on anything in life that much and start to ignore your job, your family members, that is an indication that you should back off a little bit. This is way too much. You're not getting anything done except for your obsession. So moderation is key.
My rating for this episode, I was happy to see Tom having a big episode, but I was not thrilled, as I've mentioned, structurally with this, just the story. I feel like it could have, you know, based on our lessons and our themes, moderation is key. If maybe things had started with, you know, everyone's in the mess hall eating, you know, cake, but Tom's just going a little too far. And then the very last scene could have been they're back in the mess hall and they've got cake again. And Tom's like, nope, I'll just take, like, I feel like it needed some bookends.
Yeah.
Kind of say like, here's where Tom was. He went down this road. Now he's learned his lesson. Or if it had been, you know, don't get lost in fantasy. If the first scene had been everybody in the mess hall and Tom really being able to articulate, wow, I love my life right now. I love reality. And then he goes down the fantasy road and then he's back in the mess hall and he says, wow, I'm really glad to be back in my real life. There could have just been some structure with a couple of added scenes.
I hear
you. It could have packaged the story with a lot more meaning than just this, this weird.
So what's your rating?
My rating is a six.
Solid six?
Solid six.
Okay. I will be higher than that, and I'm going to give this episode 7.1.
7.1. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm very curious to see. Our Admiral and Captain's average rating for Alice is 7.1. Wow.
Yes.
Ooh. Wow. Oh, nice call on that.
Thank you. I've had a few really. That one time when I guessed it was Alan Craker as the director and I was right, you were shocked. You're like, I can't believe you got that one.
I know.
Was like, what? So yeah. Oh, no, it wasn't Alan. It was Potsy from Happy Days.
Anson Williams.
Yes. When I guess Anson Williams, it was a shot in the dark. It was like a 1 in 100 chance.
That that. Because he only directed it twice. Yeah,
exactly. And here I am hitting the 7.1. Okay.
7.1. Well, good.
All right.
Good,
well,
good. That was fun. Yeah, a lot of good stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, fans, for tuning in to Robbie and I's discussion of this week's episode, Alice. We hope that you tune in next week when we will be recapping and discussing the episode Riddles.
Awesome.
I like the name. I like that name.
Yeah.
All right.
Good title.
See you next week.
See everybody next week. Bye.